Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Today we're going to continue our study in the tragic days of the close of the kingdom of Judah. It's fortunate for us that we have several parallels of this account, particularly in Jeremiah, but also briefly in Ezekiel. If you can remember now, Ezekiel is the prophet with the exiles. There were three, possibly four, deportations during this period. 605 is the first time Nebuchadnezzar II came through the land, and this is when Daniel and many of the leading men were taken. He came back in 597 and took more, and then he took almost everybody in 586 when the temple fell. That's this chapter. And some think there's another deportation mentioned in Jeremiah in 582 as a reprisal for the killing of Gedaliah, which we'll deal with in 2 Kings 25. So Ezekiel is with the exiles over close to the capital of Babylon. Jeremiah is in the city of Jerusalem, and Daniel is in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar II. So we have several parallels. You might want to look at Jeremiah 34, 39, 40, verses 7 through 41, and all of 52. And these give us a lot of background. The Hebrew text of Kings has some places where it's had some omissions, and Jeremiah helps us tremendously at that point. I want to go back to the last two verses of chapter 24 before I do chapter 25 to set the stage. This is one of the darkest days in all the history of the Jews. They just really couldn't believe that God would let Jerusalem fall. The false prophets were preaching peace and prosperity and the breaking of the yoke of Babylon. But Jeremiah was saying, we're going into captivity because of our sins. You see, all these false prophets kept prophesying the words of Isaiah back to Hezekiah, this city would never fall. But they had forgotten that God's covenant is always conditional on man's faith response. And their lifestyle had shown that they were not the people of God. God took them out of the land to rebuild them, to remake them, to bring them back in 70 years. Here's the fall. Zedekiah was 21 years old when he became king. Now, Zedekiah is really an uncle to the young king Jehoiachin. His daddy Jehoiakim went with the Egyptian alliance. Nebuchadnezzar came. He died, Jehoiakim. His son Jehoiachin was put in his place, reigned 3 months. The whole Babylon army came, and Jehoiachin and the royal family and some of the priests walked out of the city and surrendered to Nebuchadnezzar II. He was taken into captivity. His uncle was put on the throne. His uncle's name, as you see from verse 17 of chapter 24, was Mattaniah. Now, he was a full brother to Jehoahaz. Now, some of these names get confusing. Let's go back for a minute and look at the four sons of the godly king Josiah. First, there was Johanan. We think he died before his father did. Then there's Jehoiakim, who became king. He's also in the Bible called Eliakim. You see it from 23:36. Now, two other sons were by one mother, so they're full brothers, and that would be Jehoahaz, also called Shallum, and Mattaniah, also called Zedekiah. We see that from chapter 23:31. So Zedekiah is the royal line. But you know the truth is, Zedekiah had it. We learn from Jeremiah, he's a very vacillating person. He tried to manipulate people, but was afraid of his princes and counselors. Finally, he became pro-Egyptian against the advice of Jeremiah. You know, he had a hard time, though. Jehoiachin was always considered to be the rightful Judean king. Even the Babylonian chronicles call him the Judean king. Most of the people thought he was the rightly godly king. And so Zedekiah was always just a stand-in at best, which undermined his authority. And combined with his vacillating personality, it was a disaster, I want to tell you. So Zedekiah was 21 when he began to reign. He reigned 11 years. That'd be 597 to 586 B.C. You say, well, some of the commentaries I read said 587. Listen to me now. The dates are always 1 year off. And some commentaries have one and some commentaries have another. You say, well, Bob, why is that? It seems to be because of the two different reckoning of dates. Now, in Egypt and Palestine, the coronation year was not counted as a full year. But in Babylon, it was counted as a full year, and that's why we're a little off from sometimes 1 year. So sometimes they say 586 for destruction, sometimes 587. Okay? Now, and his mother's name was Hamutal, and you see that from 2331. He's the full brother of Jehoahaz, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. Now, this is not the prophet Jeremiah from Anathoth. This is another Jeremiah. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that Jehoiakim had done. Now, what was that? Well, he did not correct the people's idolatry. He did not stand up for God in listening to God's true prophet. And so he followed right after Jehoiakim. He even becomes very pro-Egyptian, which these foreign alliances were always condemned. And those are the kind of things he did that was evil in the sight of the Lord. For through the anger of the Lord, this came about in Jerusalem and Judah until he cast them out from his presence. Oh, my goodness. Babylon was his instrument, but God had nullified the covenant. What a terrible thing to say. His people were cast from his presence. And Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. Now, he had had to make several oaths to the king, but he had broke those oaths because he followed his counselors who were pro-Egyptian. Now, we know that Pharaoh Necho had died, and his son, and boy, it is a killer of a name. It's P-S-A-M-M. I have it in your notes. The second was Pharaoh for a while, but he has just died again. And a man named Hophra, he's known in Greek writing as A-P-R-I-E-S. They were both, him and his father were very aggressive in messing with the Babylonian Empire. And they had kind of lured some of these smaller states to rebel because Nebuchadnezzar was off doing things in other parts of the kingdom. But boy, it spelled disaster when he came back because Zedekiah had made two different oaths to him that he was not going to rebel, and now he had. That's why he was afraid to surrender, because he knew what Nebuchadnezzar II would do to him for lying and breaking these oaths. Now, then in chapter 25, now it came about in the ninth year of his reign, that's the reign of Zedekiah, on the tenth day of the tenth month. This will be about December, January of 588 B.C. You know, in all the book of Kings, this is the only place where the day and the month and the year are said together. That shows the specificity and the importance of this event. Now, we also learn from Jeremiah 39:2, Jeremiah 52:4, and Ezekiel 24:1 confirm this exact date. God even told Ezekiel with the exiles exactly when the siege began. Now, Nebuchadnezzar. Now, this name means, may Nebo guard the landmarks or the boundary. Now, it's Nebuchadnezzar II. Sometimes it's spelled Nebuchadnezzar, N-E-Z-Z-A-R, and sometimes Nebuchadnezzar, R-E-Z-Z-A-R. And it's just a difference in spelling, trying to go back to a very difficult to pronounce and spell Babylonian name. He was the son of Nebuchadnezzar, a very strong Babylonian king. We see much of his life from the book of Daniel, of course. King of Babylon came, he and all his army. Well, we learn from Jeremiah 34:1 that not only was it the Babylonian army, but all the armies of the captured nations were with him too. It was a huge entourage of the nations of the world. Maybe that's symbolic when you know the book of Daniel and other parts of the Bible about how the kings of this world will come against the people of God. Maybe that's a symbol of that here. Against Jerusalem, camped against it, and built a siege wall round about it. Now, we know that it was a 19-month siege with a brief respite in between. Now, the respite came where an Egyptian army entered the land of Palestine to the south, and Nebuchadnezzar broke off the siege and went and engaged them. We're not sure if a battle occurred or not, but they went back to Egypt and never came back. You see that in Jeremiah 37:5 and Ezekiel 17:17, part of this pro-Egyptian alliance that really fizzled. Now, we learn from history that Nebuchadnezzar's army spread out across Judah. They attacked two southern fortresses as well as Jerusalem, probably wanting to break off their lines of communication with Egypt. And we know that's the forts as Azekah and Lachish to the south, and, of course, Jerusalem. Now, when it says built siege walls, there's some doubt in the Hebrew what that term means, but most of us feel like it's these portable towers we see on the Assyrian bas reliefs. They could be pushed up to the wall so that archers could shoot at level with the people defending the city. They could be used as battering rams against the wall. And I think those siege towers is what it's talking about. If you look at your concordance, this word is found several times in Jeremiah and Ezekiel and other parts of the Old Testament. Verse 3. On the ninth day of the fourth month. Now, from Jeremiah 52:6, we see the word fourth has been supplied. Now, I'm using the New American Standard. Do you notice in your Bible how the word fourth is in italics in verse 3? That means it's not in the Hebrew text. The word has fallen out of the Masoretic text of Kings, but it is replaced by the parallel from Jeremiah 52:6. This would be June, July of 586. The famine was so severe in the city there was no food for the people. We learned some of the gruesome things that happened from the book of Lamentations, which is an eyewitness account, many believe and most believe, by Jeremiah the prophet. In Lamentations 2:20 and 4:10, we learn it got so bad that women ate their own children. Same thing is going to happen under the siege of Titus, a much shorter siege. So it was a terrible time. Famine killed many. Pestilence from the dead bodies killed many. But it was a horrible time in the city of Jerusalem. The city was broken into in verse 4. Now we learn from Ezekiel chapter 11 verse 2 that part of the northern wall fell about midnight and the Babylonian troops began to pour in. When the king and the soldiers heard that the northern part of the city had been breached, they fled through the what's called the gate between the two walls in the southern part of the city, close to the king's garden. Now, many of us believe, because of Josephus, that the king's garden was close to the Pool of Siloam. And the wall, or the gate between the two walls, was somewhere between the connection of the Kidron Valley and the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom. And so it's the southern part of the city that they're going to flee from. You might want to see Jeremiah 39:4-5 for a parallel here. And all the men of war fled by night by way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's garden, though the Chaldeans were all around the city. And they went by the way of the Arabah. They must have snuck through the line some way, because it doesn't mention a skirmish with the troops. Josephus says that some of the renegade Jews who had already defected saw the king leaving and told the Babylonians which way he had went. Now, if you look at a map, it says he went to the Arabah. Now, the Arabah is the Jordan Valley, all the way up from close to the Sea of Galilee, all the way down to the Gulf of Aqaba. The whole thing is called the Arabah, though most often we think of the Dead Sea south. But in this particular passage, he refers to the north of the Dead Sea, close to the city of Jericho. Apparently, he was trying to sneak around the other side of the Dead Sea and maybe find solace in the land of Moab. We're just not sure. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king, overtook him in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. Well, they ran, or split up to run away. We don't know. There was a fight. Doesn't seem to be here. Now, these captains of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar was not here. He was up in Syria at a place called Riblah, and they'd have gotten real trouble if the king would have gotten away. So, boy, they went for him, you bet. They didn't want to miss him at all. Then verse 6. Then they captured the king and brought him to the king of Babylon at Riblah. Now, Riblah is on the road between Egypt and Mesopotamia. It was a fortified city. Most of us think that was the headquarters of Nebuchadnezzar for this reason. He would not only besiege the cities of Judah, but the city of Tyre had also rebelled. So it's kind of right in between those two military areas of activity. And that's probably why he was there. And he passed sentence on him. Well, the problem was that Zedekiah had given two different oaths and broken both of them. Ezekiel 37:16-18. You can see those oaths. And so he was very guilty of rebellion. And they slaughtered the sons of Zedekiah. Now, he's about 30 years old here. His children would have been small children. You say, oh, what cruel, cruel people. Well, let me say there's going to be about 100 more people killed of the elite, or governors, rulers of the land are going to be killed. But friends, this is really pretty mild. We have accounts of Assyria and Babylon where thousands of people are killed. And I'm not talking about just killed easily. I mean impaled on stakes, spread out in the ground and skinned, pulled between animals, eyes gouged out, burnt, fed to wild animals. Well, these Oriental potentates were just cruel as a junkyard dog. And so this was really pretty mild. Pretty mild. Seems cruel to us, but it was common to that day, and it was mild in comparison. Now, Zedekiah's eyes were put out. Now, that seems to fulfill the prophecy of Jeremiah 39:6 and Ezekiel 12:13, where it says that he would be blinded. Maybe that's why he didn't want to surrender. He was afraid of this, or whatever. It certainly came about. Now, that's where it says bronze fetters, which would be just like... From the bas reliefs, there was a band around each wrist and one band in between. There's a lot of these pictures of war from the empires of the Fertile Crescents, which are very helpful. By the way, I was going to mention to you, this is a good time for me to do it. Boy, this history sometimes gets so confusing, it really helps to have a book. This is The History of Israel by John Bright. And on page 305 and following is a succinct history of this period. And if you're looking for a historical overview, there's not any really good commentators on the historical books. A book like this becomes invaluable because it kind of puts all the history together for you. And I certainly trust John Bright. Another couple of books that I like very much, there's two volumes. It's put out by Roland DeVoe. It's on the governmental institutions of Israel and the religious institutions. It's very highly indexed. And boy, in books like this, it is tremendously helpful on different aspects of the culture, and you might want to see those books. Now, on the seventh day of the fifth month was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, this seventh day here, Jeremiah 52:12 and Josephus have the tenth day. And this is just one of the examples of the scribal number errors that we have in the Old Testament. I think the 10th day, because Jeremiah and Josephus agree, is probably better than the 7th day. Okay? This would be about July, August. Which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan. Now, this guy is mentioned as one of the leaders of the Babylonian army, and you might want to see the other leaders that are mentioned in Jeremiah 39, 3, and 13. He is the man that a month after the city fell, I guess Nebuchadnezzar had to think about it, he was dispatched to destroy the city of Jerusalem. Okay? A servant of the king of Babylon came to Jerusalem, and he burned the house of the Lord. Now, this was something that Jeremiah had told them was going to happen. Jeremiah 21:10, Jeremiah 34:2, Jeremiah 38:18 and 23. So it's really fulfilled prophecy. The temple is going to be destroyed. Such a beautiful thing, but it became a center of idolatry. Can you imagine that? They even had false idols in the temple area, we learn from Jeremiah and Ezekiel. The king's house, and the king's house was as palatial as the temple was. They destroyed that. And all the houses of Jerusalem, every great house, he burned with fire. So apparently he put the city to torch. The major structures. Now the rest of it just happened to get caught up in the fire that burned the whole city. So all the army of the Chaldeans, who were with the captain of the guard, broke down the walls around Jerusalem. Now we learn from Ezra and Nehemiah, they didn't break every wall down to the ground, but they made huge gaping holes in several parts of the wall to keep them from rebuilding it and making it a fortress again. When Nehemiah comes back to rebuild the walls, he repaired some of the walls and had to rebuild some other ones. So I think tear down gaps in the walls is probably a better understanding here. Let's see. And the rest of the people who were left in the city, the deserters who had deserted the king of Babylon, and the rest of the multitude, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, took away into exile. And the captain of the guard left some of the poorest people of the land to be the vine dressers and plowmen. You might want to see Jeremiah 39:10, where he gave them vineyards. They wanted these poor people who probably would not rebel. They took all the leadership kind, all the artisan types. They left these very poor people so they could tax them. They wanted them to take over the land and put taxes on them. That's why they left them. Now, when it says the people, the poorest of the land, originally in the book of Kings and Chronicles and Samuel, the little phrase, the people of the land, meant the wealthy, the landed aristocracy. But by Jesus' day, and maybe this foreshadows that, the term the people of the land had come to mean the poor people, the very poorest. Okay. Now the bronze pillars, I mean, verse 13. Now the bronze pillars, they're known as Jachin and Boaz. We see them in 1 Kings 7, 15 through 22. They were beautiful, tall pillars, gorgeous, made of bronze, ornate around the top and bottom, which were in the house of the Lord, the stands. Now this means the stands for the laver, apparently, 2 Kings 7, 27 through 37, and the bronze sea, that's the laver itself. That'd be 1 Kings 7, 23 through 26, and Jeremiah 52:20. That's where the priests washed their hands and things. Which were in the house of the Lord, the Chaldeans broke into pieces to carry the bronze to Babylon. Now that means they weren't interested in the artwork. They were too big to carry anyway. But they were going to break them down and melt them because they made swords and shields and all that, breastplates out of bronze. And so they're cutting them up just to melt them and use them for infamous war. Now these beautiful treasures, you say, well, why were they still left? Well, because most of the real expensive gold and silver had been taken either in 506 or 597. And there wasn't much left, but a few utensils were left, and they took everything before they burned it. If you want a complete list of all these utensils, you might want to see 1 Kings 7, 13 through 51. Jeremiah mentions the plunder of the temple in Jeremiah 52, 17 through 23. Okay, they took away the pots, the shovels, the snuffers, the spoons, the bronze vessels, all the things connected with the sacrificial worship. Things to take the ashes with, the sprinkle water with, all that they took. Fire pans, basins, verse 15, two pillars, the sea, the stands which Solomon made for the house, the bronze of all these vessels beyond weight. Now what that means is, not it was too much to weigh. They weighed the gold and the silver, but the bronze was so much they just cut it up and took it without weighing it. The height of one pillar was 18 cubits. Now, of course, a cubit, this is from a man's longest finger to his elbow. It's usually about 18 inches. There is a royal building cubit, we know, from both Egypt and Palestine that's 21 inches. And which one this is, we're not real sure. Notice it mentions the pomegranates on the capital all around the bronze pillars. And boy, it was a beautiful thing. Wish I could have seen them. Verse 18. Then the captain of the guard took Sarah, the chief priest. Now, he is the grandson of Hilkiah, which is mentioned in 1 Chronicles 6, 13 and 14. Okay? So he is of the line of Zadok, the priest high. He calls him the chief priest here. That's an unusual title. Usually, we're maybe the term high priest. And Zephaniah, a second priest. Now, we don't know what a second priest means, but obviously he's a very important person in the temple worship. Maybe he was the stand-in for the high priest. We're just not sure. Three of the temple officers from the city, he took one official who was the overseer of the men of war, of five of the king's advisors, and you might want to see Jeremiah 52, 25. I can't read. It says he took seven instead of five. But here's the most number of problems. Hope I don't let that bother you. King's advisor found the city, the scribe of the captain of the army who mustered the people of the land, and 60 men of the people of the land. Here would be the wealthy. Now, what he did with them, he's going to execute them. And he didn't just execute people indiscriminately. He tried to pick out those who were involved in the rebellion, it seems to be. He took them to the king at Riblah, and the king had them killed. And Judah was led away. Now, by Judah, we mean Simeon was incorporated in the tribe of Judah very early. With Judah, the tribe of Benjamin had aligned itself, and also most of the Levites. So there's mostly four tribes caught up here when we say Judah. Now, as for the people who were left in the land of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had left, he appointed Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, son of Shaphan, over them. Now, this was a man of a godly family. Ahikam is very friendly to Jeremiah in Jeremiah 26, 24. And this family's godliness can be seen from 2 Kings 22, 3, 8, and 12, and Jeremiah 26, 24. Maybe Jeremiah even made the recommendation this man be governor. It's called Yahweh is Great, is what Gedaliah means. Then all the captains of the forces, they and their men, heard that king of Babylon had appointed Gedaliah, son, a governor, and came to Gedaliah at Mizpah. Jerusalem was so destroyed, he had to move to Mizpah. We see this in Jeremiah chapter 40, verses 7 and following. And a man named Ishmael, he's mentioned here. We learn from other sources, like Josephus, that he had fled the city of Jerusalem and taken refuge in the land of Ammon. We even find that Jonathan, one of these men, had warned Gedaliah of this man's intents earlier, but Gedaliah would just not listen to him. And what's going to happen after just a few months? He's going to be killed. Now, what happened, Josephus says, they had a big party, and they got drunk, and it was easy to kill him because everybody was drunk. And he killed the king and all the Jews around him and all the Babylonian guards. We're not sure about all that. That's more than the Bible says. But somehow, through intrigue, him and 10 men are going to kill Gedaliah. And when this happened, some of the godly forces around Gedaliah, basically Jonathan, is going to try to catch them, but he's going to get away. But they become greatly afraid of Nebuchadnezzar because of these Chaldean guards that were killed. And this is where they're going to go. We learn much more in Jeremiah. They're going to go to Egypt against Jeremiah's warnings. And so what a tragedy. Now, in verse 25, we see that the mentioning of the warning here is Jeremiah 40, 13 through 15. Notice that this man was of the royal family. Maybe jealousy was what the problem was, you think? Because Gedaliah wasn't of the royal family, and he was, and he thought he ought to be in control. Or if he thought that Gedaliah was compromising, being too much duplicitous with the enemy, we just don't know. For Gedaliah seems to say, be cool, start farming, and hang in there. We'll serve the king of Babylon. But they didn't like that. Now, notice the word Jews in verse 25. This is always the word Judeans. It's an adjective used as a noun. They arose and fled to Egypt, verse 26. We see much more detail of this in Jeremiah 41 through 18. Let's see. In verse 27 through 30, it's a little note to end the book on a positive note. Remember Jehoiachin, the young king, back in 24, verses 6 and 7? Well, here we have him again mentioned, and he's let out of prison after 36 years. When Nebuchadnezzar II died, his son, Evil-Merodach, which means man of Marduk, the chief god of Babylon, he let him out. Some say it's because it was common, kind of like a releasing a prisoner the Romans did once on Passover. Maybe it was a gesture. But anyway, he let the man out of 36 years in prison, let him eat at his royal table, gave him new clothes, a royal stipend. We've even found in archaeological evidence close to the Ishtar Gate, the city of Babylon, the listing of this king and his royal supplies. Now, he was placed with the other kings. Apparently, these Babylonian monarchs were very egotistical, and they would put all the kings they deposed in their banquet room, let them eat at the king's table to kind of say, well, here's the king and here's the king. Well, he raised Jehoiachin up above these kings and placed him in his royal banquet room. And so it kind of ends on a positive note because everybody's considered this man to be the true royal line, the true descendant of David. And maybe that's why they had so much problems here. Well, this is the tragedy of the fall of Jerusalem. You ought to read the book of Lamentations to really get a picture of the pathos of this period and what it meant theologically to the Jewish people. I've enjoyed being with you, and I hope to see you again same time, same place next week. God bless you.